When the strange becomes reality, when the light becomes dark, when you open your eyes and the monsters are still there, that's when you want your family. Welcome to the safest place in the paranormal world, TAPS Family Radio. They're the family you always wish you had. Your hosts tonight are Tim Ellis of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society of Michigan and Chris Perkins of the Atlantic Paranormal Society. Interviewing the biggest names and tackling the subjects you want to hear about only on Jackalope Radio. They're not your average family, but I guess that's what makes them fun. Here is Chris and Tim.
Well, this guy wanted to get in a plane and get aerial photos of his house, so he did. And as he was up in this plane, looking down on his home, he notices people robbing his house. And so as he's looking down there, there's a trailer and there are people going in and out of his house, loading up all of his belongings. And so naturally they called 911, and an uncle who lived nearby came by and tried to take care of it. Apparently they got away with some of the stuff. He was able to recover it. But he also noticed that they had robbed the house next door, which was also owned by him. So yeah.
What are the chances of that? I mean, if I was him, after I got back and got done making sure those kids were busted, I would have ran to the casino, man, and thrown it down on a lucky number. Because the chances of you going up in a plane and actually watching people rob your house, I mean, the percentages have got to be astronomical.
You know, those two guys had to be sitting in jail later going, I just don't get it. How could this be?
Yeah, you know, they've got dumb luck. All right. Speaking of someone who's got some really good luck, though, and some really good genes, a lady in Monroe, Georgia just celebrated her birthday. But here's what's so cool about this birthday, Chris. Her name is Bess Cooper, and she celebrated her 115th birthday.
Oh, wow.
She is, according to Guinness, the oldest living person in the world right now.
Oh, wow. You know, I have such a soft spot for elderly, and just, wow, bless her heart for living that. Yeah. Now, is she able to go out and do things, or did it say much about the things she's still able to do?
It did a little. Now, they did say this birthday, the 115th birthday, was a little bit more subdued than the 114th, because at the 114th, they actually brought in an Elvis impersonator to wrap things up a bit. They said there was no Elvis impersonator for the 115th. Now, her son did. One of her sons, his name is Sydney. He's 76. He said she still remembers things, thinks clearly and talks, but she has her good days and bad days. And he says, I'd say she sleeps about 80% of the time most days, just because she doesn't have a whole lot of energy. But they've got a picture of her, and I'll tell you what, man, this picture of her, she looks like, you know, at 115 years old, she looks at like what maybe, you know, you'd expect most maybe 80 year olds to look like.
Wow.
So she's doing pretty good at 115, just celebrated another birthday.
We need to call her up and find out what vitamins she uses, what her exercise routine is, you know, take care of yourself. And
Yeah, go ahead.
I hope at 114 years old, I'm still able to enjoy things like Elvis impersonators and things like that. That's great.
I'm hearing you. You know, I'm a big believer in the fact that obviously we need to eat right and exercise. But there comes a point where it's just the genes you were given.
Right, right.
The genes will just carry you. My grandfather did everything under the sun that you are not supposed to. Right up until the day he died, when he was like 89 years old, he, you know, breakfast with Jim Beam, lunch with Jack Daniels, and he smoked cigarettes, pipes, and cigars. And I'm not condoning that. I'm saying kids don't do it. But it just goes to prove that sometimes it's all about the genes you've got, because he lived till 89 and he did everything that we know is bad for
you.
So,
you know, I wonder too, it would be interesting to talk to those people about their stress levels, because I think stress causes 90% of our health problems. I really do.
Couldn't agree more. And on that note, we want everyone to relax a little bit, all right? Relax with us tonight here on TAPS Family Radio, because we're just all about having fun and hanging out and talking about some really cool stuff. Again, make sure you join us at our website, tapsfamilyradio.net. And while you're there, you can find all of our great archive shows that we have done in the past, and you can listen to them at your leisure. You can also download our app for your iPhone. If you want to take Taps Family Radio along with you, right there on the main page, you can find the iPhone app. It's right on the right-hand side column. You can't miss it, so check that out. And then while you're there, come on over to the chat room and talk with us and ask questions for either Chris or myself. And usually our producer Cormac is in there. And, of course, if you have questions for the guests. As a matter of fact, we've got a guest coming up for you in just a bit. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to have Jim Hall from Haunted North Carolina, one of our wonderful Taps Family teams out there. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, more from TFR here on Jackalope Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio, the coolest place on the web.
Tired of wondering where to get the best ghost hunting gear at the best price? Wondering if you're being ripped off or if the product is high quality and can last the rugged life of a ghost hunter? Your fear and search is over. Creepy Hollow Gear is the home of ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters. Founded by Paul Bradford of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International, Paul wanted to create a place where all the equipment was proven and tested in the field. Some even built by Paul and his team, making Creepy Hollow Gear the only place you can get some of this equipment. Check them out for yourself at www.creepyhollowgear.com, where you'll find a place that is set up for teams and enthusiasts who aren't inclined to build their own equipment or kit. A site that has the top gear at prices a team on a budget can afford. A place where people can try new equipment and technology. That's www.creepyhollowgear.com. Ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio. Tim and Chris are taking a potty break and we'll be right back. Hidden in the shadows of Dublin, the small and unassuming area known as Carlow, Ireland, holds a haunted history that you may not know about. The town dates back to before Ireland's written history, but now its haunted history has been written and recorded by authors Cormac Strain and Danny Carthy. Haunted Carlow takes you on an eerie and fascinating journey through pubs, cafes, private homes, and schools. Go to hauntedcarlow.com. or Amazon.com to get your copy today and see a side of Carlow, Ireland you never knew existed.
Texture like sun, lays me down. With my mind she runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown. With golden brown, every time, just like the last. On her ship, tied to the mast. Two distant lands, takes both my hands. Never a frown with golden brown. Golden brown, fine temptress. Through the ages she's heading west. From far away, stays for a day. Never a frown with golden brown.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio Tuesday evening. Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins with you. And thanks for being out there and hanging out with us because, as always, without you, we can't do what we love to do, and that's to be here with another great edition of TFR live on Jackalope Radio. And at this time, we like to do our Taps Family Spotlight segment where there are so many great teams out there within the Taps family that do such great work and represent the Taps family name so well. We like to give them a spot on the show each week and find out what's going on in the different corners of the world with our Taps family teams. And at this point, Chris, I'm always happy to turn it over to you as our leader, if you will, the head of the Taps family, the manager of. It's always nice to let you introduce and get a chance to talk with these folks.
Oh, I tell you what, it's always a pleasure to do so. I'm exceptionally impressed with the quality of the teams in our Taps family, and this one is right up there with the best of them. Let me go ahead and introduce Jim Hall. He is with Haunted North Carolina. Jim, are you with us?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Jim. Thank you for joining us tonight. I know that you are also an educator, and so your back to school schedule likely has you pretty frazzled as well.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, you're kind of in luck. We're having a series of thunderstorms coming through today, which is what canceled soccer practice for me. So that's what made me able to be here instead of out in the soccer field right now.
Oh, well, good timing. And if you're you probably don't need the rain. How was the effect of the hurricane for you?
Well, we didn't get much in the part of the state where we are, but certainly the coast and the Outer Banks, they got hammered pretty bad. So, we're still recovering. And then, of course, Tropical Storm Lee coming through right now isn't helping matters much.
Wow. Yeah. Well, one after the other, that always makes it a little bit difficult on the people in the path, for sure. Well, tell us a little bit about, first of all, let's get started with you personally. What brought you in? Everybody has their story. Everybody has the thing that inspired them. What is it that started you down this path of paranormal research?
My secret origin actually has a couple of different starting points. The first thing was we had a poltergeist style haunting when I was very young. I must have been maybe 4 years old. Too young really to have actually remembered much of it myself, but I grew up hearing these stories from my brothers and from my mom about the poltergeist phenomena we were experiencing. Enough to make me curious about things, and so I kind of grew up with this fascination with hauntings and not just haunted house stories and ghost stories, but with actual real reported experiences. And then when I was a teenager, I had my own personal experience that I personally couldn't dispute, and that I certainly was very aware of what was going on, and that just kind of cemented it for me. And from that point on, I just had this desire to try to understand what's going on.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up as having had those types of experiences as a young child too, because I know it's hard as an investigator when you go into a situation that has a young child involved. So do you think maybe that helps you maybe identify with those kids in a different way that maybe other people wouldn't?
Oh, sure. I mean, because I don't remember specifically in that particular case a lot of the things that were happening, but I do remember the way that I felt. I remember my older brother, Greg, for example, we shared an attic loft with our shared bedroom, and I remember things like him coming over in the middle of the night and crawling into bed and getting under the covers because we'd hear footsteps coming across the attic floor toward us. So I remember that feeling of that primal fear that you feel, that kids can feel. And so I definitely have an empathy when we go into people's homes and they have children that are experiencing these sorts of things. It's hard enough on adults when you have something weird going on, you can't explain it. But, to children who don't have any sort of point of reference for it, it can be downright terrifying.
I agree. And then it's a helpless feeling, I think, as a parent when you're in that situation. It's hard enough with things you can explain to children, with things like when you approach the whole topic of just death in itself. That in itself is difficult enough. But when you're talking about death in the means of like a haunting, that is it has to be a helpless feeling when you're trying to talk to your child and make that make sense to them. And at the same time, make them not so fearful.
Absolutely.
It's a delicate thing to handle. And I know as an investigator, it's difficult to go into a home and talk to somebody's child about it too. How do you handle that with your group? Do you, I know if you ever talk to a child, you need to have that parent present, but I do know there are groups that refuse to even speak with the children. How does your group handle that?
We actually, I've long been a firm believer in having qualified people on the team. It's sometimes we kind of get accused of being a little exclusive, but it's just because what we're looking for is people who are qualified for certain jobs. And one of the things that we look for is we like to have people on the team who have experience either in clinical psychology or with working with children. And typically what we'll do is we'll bring one of those people on the case with us. We've had people on the team who are social workers before, and, you know, their job-related experience is in working with families.
Oh, that's very impressive. Man, I love hearing stuff like that. You know, I received an email just this week from, people have a hard time separating TAPS and ghost hunters from, you know, the actual TAPS team and TAPS family. And this woman was very upset, thinking that, you know, when the show ended with ghost hunters, that there was no follow-up with clients. And you know, I spent a great deal of time trying to illustrate for her the difference between this TV show and how they have to present things there in this one-hour time slot. And with the care and follow-up that actual TAPS family teams and the TAPS home team themselves display with clients. And so it's always good to hear when a team such as yours make sure that they have things in place to care for those people, to care for those children in an appropriate way, and to follow up with the families. That's awesome. Not many teams, well, I wouldn't say not many, but it is good to hear when a team has that in place.
Well, thank you.
I applaud you for that. So as you had your experiences and things like that, was Haunted North Carolina your first team to become involved with, or did you help organize Haunted North Carolina? How did all of that come to be?
Yes and no. You don't have enough time on your show for me to get into the whole convoluted history of Haunted North Carolina, but Haunted North Carolina came out of another team that existed for a long time, was part of the TAPS family, called Seven Paranormal Research, and I was a member of that team. That team sort of went as far as it could go around 2004 in its current state, and we ended up reorganizing in about that time into Haunted North Carolina, with a focus being more on client relationships and being client driven, rather than just going out and looking for cool graveyards to go spend the night in and things like that.
Well, you know,
not any insult to the Seven Paranormal, because that was a great group. And, we still have some of those people on the team today. But, you know, it really did change our focus.
Well, and, you know, that's perfectly fine. I think sometimes teams do that. They just they realize that they're looking at things a little bit differently, and not that either one is more correct than the other. It's just time to maybe part ways and redefine your focus a little, if that makes sense. But one thing, you know, I always review the websites of the teams we're talking to. And Jim, I have to tell you, I'm impressed. I want people to go to your website and check this out. If you're interested in checking out their website, it's at www.hauntednc.com. And you need to go to this website and check out the articles there. The one that I really just clicked immediately, because I find this to be so important, is Responsible Ghost Hunting. We've talked about this in so many different ways on this show, and it's come up with our guests, it's come up with our news stories, how teams really do have a huge responsibility if they're going to investigate private property and for private clients. And so I was really glad to see this on your website. I wish we could force people to read it. I love the fact that you talk about trespassing, and that if there is a sign that's clearly marked that it's private, you don't belong there.
That's true. And you know, a lot of that that we practice and that we also preach, it's for our protection as much as it is for the locations. I mean, we actually, with our clients nowadays, we have release forms and confidentiality forms, you know, both for their protection and for ours. It's we live in a very litigious society, and so, you know, a lot of things we're dealing with, we want to just take those gray areas out. We want to make sure that it's everything's completely above board and all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. And that way we can get on with the work that we're doing without having to worry about, legal ramifications.
Well, and it is a shame we have to think that way, but you're absolutely right. We do have to think that way. So teams who are maybe not taking that into consideration because they're not respecting the client need to look at it the way you just said. It's also for self-protection of their team when they're making sure they have the right permissions and things like that. But, you know, as you go on down that article, one thing that I'm huge about is this maintaining confidence. Client confidentiality should just be paramount to any team. And so, you know, I know that most teams have a confidentiality statement that's signed, but a lot of teams, I think, forget to honor that. And it's not that they go out and maliciously try to not honor the client confidentiality requests. I think they just sometimes get really excited about the locations and where they've been, and they want to share that with people. And before they know it, they're telling everybody. So, you know, you see websites with a bunch of evidence posted, and that always concerns me that maybe there's a little bit of oversharing going on, you know. So it was good to see that in your article, too. But, you know, I just, like I said, I encourage people just to go. You've got articles about everything here. You've got the hag phenomenon, the sleep paralysis, poltergeists, ghost lights. Just people need to go. They just need to go and check this out. Great website. Very impressive.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know, I love North Carolina. I love North Carolina. My family is all over North Carolina. If you know a Sullivan there, I'm related. I know it. I don't even have to know who they are. I just know I'm related. But I don't know much about the haunted places in North Carolina. So I always love to hear about a place that you find unique to your state, or that you have found that's maybe not one of the, you know, big famous haunts or anything. Do you have a favorite location that you like to return to or that caught your attention?
Well,
where should I go? If I go to your state, where should I go?
I might be a little biased about this, but, you know, the Battleship North Carolina has always been a big one for us. That was a case we were working for years before we were able to bring Ghost Hunters down to film there. And ever since that aired, it's just completely taken off. They're booked every weekend with paranormal teams coming in to research, which I think personally is a great thing because it brings attention to the site. It helps raise money for them. And also when you are trying to do science, it helps to have, you know, lots of people going into a location sharing data. It can be a little muddy sometimes when people start, you know, sharing their experiences, but, you know, I think more good comes up from bad. So the Battleship North Carolina, that's a great one. We're actually, I don't even know if I can talk about this yet. I won't say the name of the place, but one of the cases we've got coming up, it's a historical town on the coast. I'll just say that much. And we are actually going to have access for an entire weekend to the entire downtown district.
Oh, wow.
There have been so many different places, different businesses in this downtown district of this town that have reported activity, and we have actually gotten permission to take as large a team as we can manage out there, set up in multiple locations, and we'll have basically a city block to ourselves for the weekend, and we're really super excited about that. I don't want to say the name yet because the final arrangements haven't been made. I don't want to, you know, blow anything that way, but we're super excited about that. And that'll be coming up probably late October, early November.
Wow, that I want to know more. When can you share? That just seems like a lot to take on. I mean, wow, you're going to have to do a lot of pre-planning on that, aren't you? As far as how to cover everything and
a lot of pre-planning, a lot of coordination. We're probably even going to have to bring in, just extra pairs of hands. The nice thing about it is that we'll be able to have multiple groups right at the same time without tripping over each other because it's going to be such a large area to cover. And, you know, of course, the downside of that is then when we're done, there's going to be just weeks and weeks of evidence review and data review. But that will be the less fun part. But, you know,
that's
what we do. It's not like we've never done that before.
Right. Absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see when you have a city block like that. You know, we have a whole neighborhood right now that wants us to come in. So I can kind of identify with that, trying to coordinate everything. There are just so many houses in this neighborhood having experiences that our team will be going in. So I think as far as me personally, I'm excited to see how many different locations in that neighborhood come back with something that, that kind of correlates with each other. So I'm sure that you're excited to think about that as far as the city block too.
Oh yeah, we're super excited about it.
That's awesome.
Plus, it's a weekend on the coast. I mean, so worst case scenario, you know, we've got that going for us.
Well, and there's so much history and so many things that happen along coastal North Carolina that can play into, I'm sure, where you're going. So, you know, if you find out that you have the freedom to share that, I can't wait to hear about it. That'll be pretty neat to hear about. Now, you have a member on your team that we've had on our show that we just really adore. And I was able to meet her at the Taps family reunion this past June, which, by the way, I've not gotten over the fact that you didn't go yet. But, you know, I'm working on it. A little bit of therapy there.
I'm sorry.
That's OK. We're just going to make you go to the next one. You can make it up to us that way.
OK, that's a deal.
But we, of course, got to meet Deanna and She's such an interesting person to talk to. I think she's been everywhere. And she has such unique perspectives on everything and really has a way of making people think about things. But she has something that is, I think, out today. Do you want to share a little bit about that? I think was released today.
Yeah, Deanna Kelly Said has her first book that's been published. I think it's released today. The name of the book is Paranormal Obsession: America's Fascination with Ghosts and Hauntings, Spooks and Spirits. Basically, it's a book about the whole terrortainment phenomena, covering not just Ghost Hunters, but other shows along that genre, how they came to be, how they've affected the culture of paranormal research since they came on. I'm a little biased once again because, you know, I was one of the people interviewed for the book, but I thought it was a great read. She's a great writer, and I think it's one of the things you recommended people come to our website. I recommend people buy this book.
If
nothing else, you know, it's you're going to buy books about the paranormal anyway, and this is a good one.
Well, she's just, like I said, she's just so interesting to meet. And in fact, we are launching our first TAPS Academy in November, on November 12th. And so I can put a little plug in there at St. Albans. And she'll be joining us there in Virginia to promote her book and to do book signings. And it'll be a pleasure, again, to get to sit with her. I do plan on having her sign a book for me so I can have my own copy. But for more information on that, people can go to tabsacademy.com, find out more information about that particular lecture and the fact that Deanna will be there with her book to promote and sign that evening. I just love the fact that TAPS family teams have ways of contributing to the field like that. I think it's a good thing when we can see teams taking the field seriously enough to put that much of a contribution into it. And I know you must be very proud to be able to work with her at that level.
I am. I've known Deanna for a few years now, and I've seen this whole project go from an idea she had to the final product. And, you know, it's all her hard work, and she's earned every bit of accolade that she gets for it.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, you know, I'm sitting here again and I'm looking at your articles on your website, which, by the way, all of these articles are from your team. Is that correct?
Yes.
So they're not just copy and paste. And so, again, that reflects on your whole team, is the fact that you want to contribute in this way. And I see something there that I believe we talked about it briefly on one of our shows, but it just keeps coming up lately as far as people I'm talking to, and that's ghost lights. Now, it caught my eye because I read a book, and it was a fictional book, but it was based in North Carolina, and it was about ghost lights in this one particular town, and I don't recall the town, but I started wondering, is that a popular thing in North Carolina, or is that something that you've dealt with there?
There's actually several ghost lights here now. That particular article written several years ago, and new research has come about since then. And I'm now kind of of the opinion, I think it's probably a natural geological phenomena, but that doesn't change the fact that they're very cool, especially being a science teacher. I think that's, you know, possibly even more cool. But yeah, we do have several famous ones. We've got the Brown Mountain lights out in the mountains. We've got the Pactolus light up near Greenville. We've got the lights at Mako Station. That's probably the one that you're familiar with. that's down near Wilmington. So they're, yes, they are all over the state. You know, people just report seeing these ghostly lights that appear and disappear. And, you know, whether it's something paranormal or whether it's just something, you know, completely, like I said, a geological phenomena, it's a very cool thing. And when you see something like that and you don't know what's going on, you know, the imagination goes wild sometimes. So you get these incredible stories that go along with it, like the lights at Mako Station, which involved, you know, a train engineer who met an unfortunate accident, and the ghost light's supposed to be him swinging his lantern, warning off, you know, people that the train's coming and things like that. So great stories, and just, you know, no matter what's causing them, just a really cool phenomenon to see.
I agree. And, you know, we've got a few ghost lights here, but none of them have a cool story like that. But they will after the show. No, I'm going to have to cook up something. No, I would never do that. But yeah, definitely interesting. And I think, you know, you mentioned something there that is important. You're a science teacher. And so, of course, you're going to look at those things from a little bit more of a scientific standpoint. You know, and the hard part about that is, wouldn't it be nice? And we do kind of lose this as investigators, but wouldn't it be nice just to be able to sit and enjoy those things for the kind of creep factor that we used to before we got into this kind of thing and got to the point where we analyze it so heavily? I mean, there's a reason everybody goes up to see these ghost lights, and it's because it just kind of gives them that ooh factor, and we kind of get the roll your eye factor.
I do miss it. I'll be completely honest with you. Halloween's always been my favorite holiday, and I used to love going through the haunted house. And now when I go through, I'm looking for the wires and where the speakers in the wall are, just because you get so trained into that debunking mindset that, you know, you're automatically, you know, and everything you do, it carries over. Even things that you know going in are fake. You can't really enjoy the creepiness of it anymore.
I agree. You're going through there going, it's not really like that. That's nothing like it really is. And yeah, I was even watching TV this weekend, and it was there was a show on, which I probably shouldn't say, but there was a show on that included children, and it was about psychic children. And I just found myself the whole time going, oh, you know, they're using this, you know, piece of equipment, and oh no, they're doing it that way. So we can't even enjoy the TV anymore. But, you know, I think it's important that we do look at things from that scientific standpoint. And so I like hearing that you do. Good job. Good job. Well, what kind of changes do you see, or do you hope, and this is a broad question, but, you know, definitely in the last 10 years we've seen, or, you know, even longer than that, we've seen the field changing and evolving. So as a scientist or as a science minded person, what kind of changes do you hope to see coming up in the field in the future?
I would love to see more collaboration. And when I say collaboration, I mean true collaboration, not just, and don't get me wrong, the Taft family is great, and I think that it's very important that we get together and know each other socially, but not just knowing each other, but working together and sharing methodology and sharing sharing data. The disturbing trend I've seen since the field, you know, around the time that Ghost Hunters debuted, just hit a boom period. Where the popularity of paranormal research just skyrocketed. But unfortunately, what came along with that was a lot of people that were sort of exclusive, like they wanted exclusivity. They got very territorial. You know, people that were saying, you know, you can't come into this location because we were here first and things like that. And you know, that's just nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like I said with the battleship, hundreds of teams have come through the battleship now. It's been nothing but good for the battleship, and as long as people are investigating responsibly, it's good for the field. There needs to be that collaboration now, that spirit of, you know, other fields of science work together. They don't, you know, snipe at each other as much as the paranormal field seems to. So that's what I would really like to see change in the future.
I couldn't agree more. And Tim, I think that you can back me on this. I've asked that question before, and that's not the first time we've had that answer.
No, absolutely. It's the right answer too. It's what's going to propel this field forward on the research end of things. And Jim's absolutely right on that one.
You know, and I'm not even sure why this field is that way, because, you know, as you said, to have everybody coming in with their own thoughts and their own ideas and methods, it's the only way to move forward. So I'm not sure where, I don't know if it's people wanting to be the team that gets that piece, you know, the one piece of evidence that impresses everybody. I don't know if that's what it is, or I don't know. But maybe the fact that we're getting this answer more often means that more people are willing to kind of collaborate as well, I hope.
Well, I think you hit on something there with people just looking for that holy grail, that one piece of evidence that's going to convince everybody. And, you know, I'll say right now, that piece of evidence doesn't exist. That's not how this field's going to move forward. The field's going to move forward with people contributing tiny bits of evidence that all work together to create a larger picture. There's not going to be that one EVP or that one piece of video or that one photograph that suddenly makes the world say, oh, this is, you know, this is real. This is what it is. That just is not going to happen, especially in this day and age when so much can be so easily faked. But you know, looking at, you know, data over large sample groups and over, you know, large geographical areas and seeing the things that line up, that's where the real science is. And that's got to have people working together.
I agree. And I think as we do this, you know, we have to be willing to accept the fact that we may be doing everything right now completely wrong. And the only way to come to that conclusion is to have everybody comparing and talking and, you know, trying things to figure out that, hey, you know what, this isn't working, but, you know, maybe this will. And I don't think that happens when people are just working on their own.
Absolutely.
So that's, yeah. Wow.
And I think that's something that you bring up a good point there, Chris. Us and as the whole field, we need to kind of put down our guard a little bit and accept the fact that what you said, I think, is very important, that maybe we are doing everything wrong, but we're not going to learn unless we make the mistakes first. And I mean, this just goes back to our last interview we had with Barry Fitzgerald and the strides he's made in his research, too. So I think we've got to accept the fact that maybe we're not doing it right yet, but we're only going to learn from that.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And I just think that as we move on and people becoming more willing to open up that way, I think that's when we're going to start seeing progress.
Absolutely. Now, Jim and Chris, Jim, I don't want you to think that I stepped away from the mic during the interview. Chris just had great questions, and I'll be honest, I was getting lost in a good way. I was delved right into your website as soon as Chris gave the address, which is hauntednc.com, and I was just going through all the links, checking out some of the articles. But one of the places that I love that you guys have on your website is you have you share with people through Amazon the books. I'm assuming these are the books that you and your group mates have read. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm a book nut. If there's whether it be fiction or nonfiction, if there's a book out there about ghosts or the paranormal or the weird, you know, I've got to read it. And so I was really enjoying just kind of going through some of the books you guys have read. And then all of a sudden you guys talk about, Chris, you brought up how, you know, sometimes we wish we could go back as kids and kind of remember, you know, that fun. I want to say that I don't think we should ever lose that. I think there's a time and place for it. Obviously, when we're dealing with clients and people, we've got to stick to the scientific stuff and do what we've got to do. But, you know, I don't think we can ever truly lose that, because that's what drove us to this. You know, I mean, that's what we loved as a kid, a good ghost story and a good find. And I see some of the books you have, Jim, in your bookstore there is from an author, Jeff Belanger. And he just put out a great book called Legend Tripping. And if you and Chris haven't read that yet, I recommend it, because it's really about him saying exactly what you and Chris were talking about. You know, it's great that we're doing this, but we've still got to remember to enjoy ourselves away from the families and that type of stuff. So we've still got to do our own thing. And it's called Legend Tripping. I recommend you guys reading it, because I think you're going to love it. And it's going to hit right home to that little kid that I think is still in all of us out there.
That's a great point, Tim.
And Jeff's a great writer, too. I've read, you know, several of his things, and, you know, frequent reader of Ghost Village. And, you know, cannot recommend his writings more highly. He was also interviewed in Deanna's book, you know, plugging that one more time. highly recommended writer.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Actually, one of my personal favorites in the field. And what I like about Jeff was doing it before it was cool to be involved you know, to be involved in the paranormal. He's been writing about this field forever. So he is a good one. Check out, it's called Legend Tripping. And like you said, check out Deanna's new book too, which I'm sure is going to be in your bookstore very soon as well. Correct?
Yes. Yes, available through Amazon. Sorry. I was lost in what you were saying. Yes, available through Amazon.com now. And as soon as I'm able to get the computer, we're going to go ahead and put it up on the website, a link to it since it's available today. And and hopefully in your local bookstore very soon.
Very good.
And if you do get a chance to go to one of those book signings, not just the one at Taps Academy, if you see her anywhere, go, because just sitting and talking with her is an enjoyable experience. I think anybody would really enjoy that time with her.
All right, there we go. Jim Hall from Haunted, North Carolina. Jim, thank you so much for taking time to be with us, man, and sharing the stories from your great team and from your great state of North Carolina.
Thank you, guys. I enjoyed it, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Again, their website is hauntednc.com. Great website, a lot of information. Check it out. We are going to take a break. When we come back, more from Taps Family Radio here on Jackalope Radio.
The sun rises slowly as you walk away from all the fears and all the faults you've left behind. The harvest left no food for you to eat. You cannibal, you meat eater, you see. But I have seen the same, I know the shame in your defeat. But I will hold on hope, and I won't let you choke on the noose around your neck. And I'll find strength in pain, and I will change my ways. I'll know my name as it's called again. Other things to fill my time. You take what is yours and I'll take mine. Now let me at the truth which will refresh my broken mind. So tie me to a post and block my ears. I can see widows and orphans through my tears. And know my call despite my faults and despite my growing fears. Come out of your cave walking on your hands and see the world hanging upside down. You can understand dependence when you know the maker's land. So make your sirens call and sing all you want. I will not hear what you have to say, 'cause I need freedom now. It's meant to be.
Listening to Taps Family Radio. We'll be.
If you're in need of a professional, experienced, and confidential paranormal investigation at a home or commercial location, the International Paranormal Reporting Group is ready to talk with you. For more information about us and other services we offer, or to interact with team members and people just like you, visit us online at iprgc.com. That's iprgc.com. The International Paranormal Reporting Group is a proud TAPS family member.
You're listening to TAPS Family Radio. You may want to keep the lights on. The TAPS family is truly international. If you live in the peninsula of Fife on the eastern border of Scotland and feel you may have a haunting, there's help. Scottish Paranormal, a proud TAPS family member, is a scientific-based paranormal research team that is dedicated to the study of the unknown. Helping individuals, families, and business owners over the past 6 years, Scottish Paranormal is ready to help you. Their work is confidential and no charge for service will ever be asked of their clients. If you feel you need the help of Scottish Paranormal, then go to their website at www.scottish-paranormal.com. co.uk.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to TAPS Family Radio on this Tuesday evening. Tim Ellis with you, along with Chris Perkins. And again, we remind everyone to come on into our chat room and join us at tapsfamilyradio.net. That's our main site where you can go anytime and check out any of our past shows. Even this show will be posted within 24 hours. Usually within 24 hours, our producers have everything posted for us. And they do such a great job of keeping that updated right away. And we also invite everyone to follow us on Facebook. If you're not following us on Facebook yet, we do keep that updated and promote all of our upcoming shows and let you know when the new podcasts are up as well. So just go to Facebook, type in TAPS Family Radio. There are a couple different TAPS Family Radio groups out there. A couple of them are fan pages, but you'll know when you find ours. And we invite you to come on over and join us on Facebook. Well, we are ready to bring a gentleman on the show with us who we had on quite a while ago now. So we're really excited to have him back with us because the type of work he does is changing and changing fast. New stuff coming out all the time. And that's why I'm really excited to be able to welcome back to TAPS Family Radio, Gary Gulka. Gary, thank you so much for being with us. And I can't even imagine how you find time to do a radio show when it seems like to me you're probably just working all the time on new gadgets for the field.
Well, thanks, Tim. It's nice to be back with you and Chris this evening. And yeah, you know, you're right. I tend to work a little bit late. So actually, this is a nice break for me to get away and come in here and chat with you guys. You know, even on the weekends, once in a while, I'll work, you know, half a day or something like that. But for, my mind is just crunching stuff all the time. And I really enjoy the, you know, the time away and working on stuff. And I've got all these ideas. I just can't bring them all out at the same time. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, there's a good chance that our listeners are probably, if they are part of a research group, are probably using a handful of your products out there. Mm. One of my favorites that and I've got almost everything that you've created, at least one of. But one of my favorites that I love is the Mel REM meter. I think that has become so handy and such an integral part in our toolbox of gadgets. That's what you do. You create a lot of these things that we're out there in the field using.
That's true. And you know, it's funny, the story about the Mel REM, it's my first, I guess my idea about the REM came into play when I came back from Queen Mary. And I saw a couple of new gadgets that were created by a couple of the guys that were there. And I came back and I started thinking about it. And I said, you know, how can we make things so easy for spirit to interface with us? And this whole thing just started crunching away. And from the time I got back to the time I put together a prototype, it was about 72 hours. And I then took that unit, and that unit went to Chris Fleming because he had a live show with Zach and the guys at the Allegheny Asylum. And that went to Zach, and I think the rest is history because Zach has been using that. He mentions the Mel REM in his book. He's got a new book out, and he's got probably 7 pages dedicated to the Mel meter and to my daughter, which was really a wonderful thing.
Oh, how nice. Very yeah. Nice. Real quick, let's backstep here just real quick, kind of give everyone an idea. What is your background? Why are you able to create such great devices like this? What do you do that mm-hmm. allows you to be able to understand this stuff?
How to understand this stuff? Well, yeah. I went to school for electrical engineering, and and electronics. And I got my degree. When I came out, I worked for a company called Weston Instruments. They were on Frelinghuysen Avenue in Newark, New Jersey. And that was that's where I cut my first tooth for a job. I worked for them for 3.5 years in marketing and engineering, designing and stuff. And then I went to a company called Analogic Corporation. They're out of Boston. They're actually in Danvers, Massachusetts. They make CAT scanners and they make things for GE and Siemens and a lot of those high-tech companies. And I was working with all kinds of signals. I was working with strain gauges for load cells and torque sensors and pressure transducers and RTDs and thermocouples. And so all these sensors that I'm now incorporating to my devices, these are things that I've worked with my whole life. So, you know, when I got out of college, and again, I don't want to give away my age, but I think everybody knows that I'm in my mid-50s. I'll be 57 very, very soon. But all these ideas are things, real-world experiences that I've used in the past. So all I'm doing is taking what I already know and trying to apply it in a way that could enhance or maybe push this particular area a little bit forward. And so, you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, I've worked with every sensor out there. So when people say to me, oh, you can't combine a thermocouple with an EMF AD or anything like that, I'm like, geez, you know, if they only knew that I've worked with systems that had thousands of inputs at one time. It's just a silly notion that you can't combine sensors. So in fact, the new MEL-REM that's out right now includes a hot and cold spot detection circuit as well, which is the unit they use on Paranormal Challenge, which has been very successful on the show.
Yeah, and I think it's important that our listeners understand your background, and that's why I wanted to step back and allow you to explain it, because I think it's important that they understand that you are coming from a place where you know what will work together, and that's why these pieces of machinery that we are taking out into the field with us now are becoming so valuable. Again, I can't tell you how much I love the MEL-REM. Now, did you say that was the first? Was that your first piece of equipment you really created?
Well, the MEL-meter, the basic MEL-meter came out, and then we went to the MEL Pro Navigator, which had a few different things inside of it that I planned ahead for this whole series of products. So what I did was with the MEL meter, I created a basic MEL meter, and then I created one that had expansion capabilities, and I called that the Pro Nav. The Pro Nav then had glow-in-the-dark buttons, it had a flashlight, and then it had a little piggyback card inside there that allowed me to add all of these new cards that you're starting to see, because we now have 10 MEL meters on the market, okay, different varieties. And I've been coming out with a new MEL meter every 3 months. So we've got all these different varieties, and people that are out there, and I want to just let your viewers, let your listeners know that if you have a MEL meter, I can, and you don't want to invest in a whole new MEL meter, I can take that and modify it for the cost difference. So you don't have to necessarily go out and reinvent a whole new product. I can take what you have and make it better. So if anybody likes the MEL-REM, or they like, I have a new product which has a three-axis gravity, it's a G-force detection system built into it. It actually detects gravity or vibration coming from three different axes, X, Y, and Z. If somebody said to me, I'd like to, you know, take my basic MEL and create it into something a little bit more elaborate, I can do that for them. So going into this from the very beginning, I had a very logical plan set up so that people don't necessarily have to keep buying the products, but they can actually upgrade the product.
Yeah, it's another thing that I've read about your company and how, and what you guys are doing now is creating exactly that, you know, where you don't have to go out and spend all the money to get a brand new one. And I think that's great, especially in a field where, and I remember us talking about this the last time you were on the show, it's a field where expenses can start to add up real quick. So when you can have something that can help you watch the budget a little bit, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, they really do. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, Gary, you know, one thing that I've always appreciated about you is that you're very responsive in email. And when I contact you with questions, you know, you and I have had discussions on the phone, and I really like that you're open to that. So how are people, if they want to upgrade their meter, what should they do? Should they call the company? Should they drop you an email? How do they go about that?
Yeah, the best, I guess, Chris, the best thing to do is to start off with an email. Okay, send it to sales at promeasure, promeasure.com, and just tell me what you'd like to do. And if you go on our website, you can see all of the Mel meters that we have in the Mel meter category. And if you see something there that you like or you like to upgrade, then you look at whatever price you paid or whatever the basic price is that you paid, and then you look at the price of that unit and you pay the difference. That's all you do. And I even paid to ship it back to you. So it's just a matter of determining what you need. But, you know, the funny thing is, Tim, Chris, the funny thing is that people buy more than one millimeter, which is great. I mean, it's great because you know that the whole cause that I'm really into is we have a number of charities that we you know, that we work with. And a third of the proceeds from our sales goes to a number of grief support charities. And I've been maintaining that now for, you know, three and a half years. So it's important to me.
I confess I own two, but I, you know, when I split my team up, I like for each one, each section of my team to have one. So yeah, I own two.
That's nice to hear. Yeah, oh, that's good. I appreciate that. Thank you.
They are great meters.
Supporting the cause. And again, and Gary, you just touched on something that I was going to make sure we got out there too, is the fact how much your company does give back. Cause I mean, this is a time in the paranormal field where there are people out there who are getting criticized for trying to, you know, make money off of this, boom in the paranormal. But I think it's very important for people to understand the charity work and not only just money that you guys have given, but also equipment that you guys have donated for the cause of research in paranormal.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, if somebody has a good cause and it's something that makes sense to us, I'll be the first one to make a donation and try to help somebody out. Chris, I think it wasn't too long ago that you had a good cause that I worked with you on, wasn't it?
Absolutely. You sent a meter that was part of an auction to benefit Hasbro Children's Hospital.
Yeah, there you go. Great. So see, anything that has to deal with children, you know, I'm really a big advocate of those types of things and helping other people that are in a desperate situation. We have, you know, the grief support groups, I can't begin to tell you, you know, what parents go through when they lose a child. And for me, or even siblings for that matter, and there's so many, I mean, I could go on and on about that because I'm so excited about helping people in that field. But even with my equipment, everything that I do is tested out before it goes out into your hands. Okay. And, you know, I've got some new devices that I've created. I've sent some of these new devices out to some beta test sites where they've been tested. They've actually sent me back results and files, and they've been really good. And what we're doing is we're trying to, you know, make a bigger jump than what we've already done. And for some strange reason, I'm always trying to outdo myself, and I hate it because I get all stressed out, you know, but I'm always trying to do something bigger. And after a while, you know, I begin to think like, you know, where's this going to go? And I really don't know where it's going to lead because in some ways I'm being guided a little bit, but I mean, I'll wake up and all of a sudden I'll have this great idea. And within, you know, a day or two, I'll have something that's actually working. And a good example of that is the new, the RT-XTR. Now you probably haven't heard about this yet. And many people haven't. I haven't really released it, although it's already on a couple of shows. You'll see it on GHI and you'll see it on Ghost Adventures. But the RT-XTR, what it does is, it takes the microphone. The microphone inside the RT-EVP device is the size of a grain of rice, okay? And you can cut it in half for the left and right channel. So what I did was I took that and I embedded that into a Faraday shield. So now you've got the microphone embedded into an enclosure. It's encapsulated. And then what we did was through software and through some filtering, we've been able to attenuate certain frequencies that blocks out the human voice and it blocks out ambient sounds around you. So if somebody has a stomach growl, okay, you're not going to hear it. If there are crickets, you're not going to hear it. If it's raining, you're not going to hear the raindrops. If somebody takes a step, you're not going to hear that. But spirit voice passes through. And the best part about it is you can use it with a speaker and you can play that speaker live within 6 inches of the RT-EVP. So what you have essentially is a white noise generator. You're recording and you're playing back simultaneously and the spirit voice is coming through the white noise. some of the actual files that have been submitted to me by our beta test sites have been remarkable. I mean, I've got one person sent me a file. A young boy is calling out dad and daddy, and it's so clear. And a human voice would not come through because it's completely blocked out. So this is a new technique that I'm experimenting with. It has a lot of promise. I'm hoping that some of the shows have good success with it, because you can't fool it. You can't fake it. It's all very real. So, you know, that's just one example of the direction that I'm heading in.
I'm very excited, Gary, what you just said there about how the microphone chip actually has a built-in Faraday cage, because that's something that my team and I have done from the first onset of using digital audio recorders. We have them all and personally built Faraday cages for them. That's something I've always used, and I was really excited to hear you say that. Now, for people who may not know, the RT-EVP is a product that's been on the market for a while now. I own one of them. A real-time EVP player, basically, is what it is. Kind of just for someone who may not know what that is all about, can you explain that real quick?
I'll be happy to. Let's see if I can do it quick. Okay. The RT-EVP came out about a year ago. It's been out just a little bit more than a year. We started shipping last June. And the RT-EVP, the new one, the 2011 RT-EVP, I've added some new features that I'm really hoping will help us better understand what's happening around us. And what it does is I've embedded a numerical interface that allows Spirit to actually change numbers, okay, through the use of the microphone. Now, that sounds really cool, but I've actually gone one step beyond. You can set the threshold. There's actually a gate that you can adjust so that you can get, you can pick up very strong energy EVPs like a Class A. You can actually separate the strength of an EVP, and the device does data logging with a date and timestamp, and it tells you exactly where that EVP is on the file, so that when you set it up and you use it, it'll tell you where it is. Now, when I say it's a data logger, I mean you could literally take the RT-EVP, tell it when you want it to turn on, put it someplace, say that you want it to run for 2 hours, come back, and it will tell you if you captured any EVPs and where they are on the date and the time. So it actually counts them for you. So what the purpose of all that is to help you cut down on your analytical time. And the whole concept there is, if you have it set and adjusted properly, you're going to capture good EVPs and skip past the ones that you really aren't too interested in. So if you catch it on this device, you'll know where they are. You go right to it. You simply press the play button, and it takes you right to the location on the file where the EVP is located. So that's something new. I've also included with the new 2011 a remote microphone with separable left and right channels that allows you to separate the left and right channel by up to 10 feet. Now, the purpose of that is so that you can help determine the origin of an EVP in a room, so that if it's coming in the right earpiece or the left earpiece, you might be able to distinguish that. And so my goal there is, by throwing in a free microphone, that you might be able to determine a little bit more information on proximity. We've increased the amplification by 5x on the new 2011, so you're going to get a much deeper, richer sound, okay? And we've added a couple of other things. They may not have any significant contribution to you, but from an electrical point of view and operational point of view, it's a greatly improved product.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Now I have an RT, and I do know that there are going to be people that ask me this, so I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there for you. No, it's a good thing.
Okay.
On the RT, now you're talking about the new model, how it will mark the EVP for you so that you can go directly to those. Mm-hmm. There are going to be people that still want to go back and listen to the entire file. Can they do that?
Yeah, that's happening for you. Yeah. You're recording. If you have it set to run for 3 hours, you're going to have a 3 hour file. The only thing that the counter or data logger interface does for you is it tags. It'll tag where all your EVPs are, or anything that goes above a threshold that you select. So you can select the RT-EVP to distinguish or pick up something as soft as a whisper, or something as soft as a normal voice, like the way that we're talking, or something as loud as a shout. So you can adjust it any way you want, anywhere in between, and you know, the device will do the rest of the work for you. So you've got your long 3 hour file, but it's always cool to be able to walk up to it and see that you captured something. You know, I mean, there's a little element of excitement there when you walk up and say, hey, I caught something, you know. And so you, when you go to that counter and you see five counts on it, and then it tells you, oh, there's one at a minute and 16 seconds. There's another one at 3 minutes and 42 seconds and so on and so forth. You know, you're going to, for me, that's like a Christmas present, you know, opening it up and trying to figure out what I got there, you know.
That's exciting for sure. Now, yeah. Now, does this one also, I was really impressed with everything you were saying, but I can't remember. Did you say that this one still has the frequency scanner?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So you still have all the other features that you have, Chris, with your unit. The only thing I did was I actually invested about 500 hours of my time, okay, writing getting this new software developed, and throwing in some new doodads into the box, okay? Mm-hmm. So what we've done is we've got all these extra things in there, and the prices remain the same. So far, we've got 1,562 hours invested in software time in the RT-EVP device. Now, if you ask me if I've made my money back on that device, I'll say no, it's a lost cause, because I don't think I could get my money back in 5 years with this device. We're not selling enough of them at the $289 price, okay, to actually pay for the time I put into it. So I'm a little concerned about that, because I really took a pretty large risk, you know, to get this thing built. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm going to keep it going for at least one or two more production runs. If the economy doesn't improve, if things, you know, things don't get better in general, I don't know if I'm going to keep it going. But it's a very expensive device to build in small quantities. I want your listeners to understand, we don't sell 1,000 of these things in a year. Okay, it doesn't happen. The paranormal market is a very small core group of people. And in order to help you guys take this extra step that you need, I've made a huge investment. But whether or not it'll pay for itself has yet to be seen.
Wow. Well, there was one concern that I know I emailed you about, and I truly appreciated your answer that you sent me. And so I thought I'd bring it up to give you a chance to maybe do that on the show, too. Mm-hmm. There, people had concerns, and it's a legitimate mm-hmm. question, I think, for people who don't have the knowledge you have, about the frequency scanner and about whether or not they would be picking up baby monitors and police scanners and radio stations. And the answer that you sent me satisfied me as to that not being possible. Can you maybe explain how you've put in fail-safe for that?
Well, on the frequency scanner, we didn't address that, Chris. We addressed some of the recording, mm-hmm. You know, some of the recording techniques, okay? Anytime you're sweeping frequencies, you're susceptible to all kinds of stuff. You know, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's no guarantees that you can't pick up a baby monitor, as far as we're talking about sweeping with the radio frequencies, correct?
Right. Well, and yeah. then you had mentioned something about using frequencies from Japan or something like that. Do you remember?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, what we did was, all the radios, domestic radios, and I do this with the PSB7 as well. All the domestic radios in the U.S., you know, they scan the FM frequency range of 88.5 to 108. And what I decided to do was, it's a very simple change, but there's no practical purpose for it in the United States, so people don't do it. I decided to take frequencies that are typically used in Japan, and I decided to incorporate those into the RT, and I've also done it on the new PSB7, so which is the spirit box that Chris Fleming uses and Zach uses and so on. So what we did is we added those extra frequencies here. Now, what that does is it gives us an extra 100 frequencies to sweep. And if you get a hack box or something like that, you're not going to be able to do that. And so the RT-EVP can sweep FM only, not AM. I believe in FM. I mean, I've seen some pretty remarkable responses in the FM. There's not as much talk in the FM as there is in the AM, and it's a lot cleaner when I listen to it. So, plus, I don't have a lot of room for another card, for an AM card to scan AM as well. So I went with the FM, but as far as sweeping the frequencies go, typically you won't get anything between the 76 and the 86 megahertz range. So when you sweep through those, it's fairly clean. It's mostly white noise. I've only had two or three EVPs through that area. I've had people submit some to me. I probably have a dozen or so where there are EVPs in that clean area where there are no radio stations. Now, let me expand on that. Unless you have something else to add, I'll tell you what I've done to help further eliminate radio stuff. Do you have anything else?
No, go right ahead. Yeah, okay. That's great.
All right. I'm working with the SB7 now. I'm just creating it now. What I'm doing is there's two things I want to do. One is some people prefer AM frequencies. Some people prefer FM frequencies. What I'm going to do is I'm going to combine AM and FM together. Okay. So they're actually going to sweep simultaneously. So people have a choice of AM, FM, or FM and AM simultaneously in a spirit sweep. Now, the other thing I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be, depending where you are and your proximity and environment, you know, the conditions, weather conditions and so forth, atmospheric conditions, you're going to get different kinds of reception. Well, one of the things I'm going to do is in the future, when you buy one of my products, you'll be able to go in and you'll be able to skip past the radio stations. So you'll be able to teach the PSP7, hey, I don't want it to stop at 106.9, okay? And it'll skip right by it. So when you learn, it's going to teach how to, basically you're going to teach the device how to ignore the radio stations so that we can at least try to minimize anything that might be interfering with your spirit session.
Awesome. Well, I think that will greatly address the concerns that people have about that. So that's a good answer.
Yeah. Okay, good. Awesome. And the other thing I want to say is, you know, with the SB7, I've already added temperature to it. I have prototypes that have temperature built into it, static detection built into it, and a flashlight built into it. So we have, you know, we've done all these things already. It's just really a matter of time, my time, to be able to get these available to everybody. So sooner or later, it'll be out there.
Well, yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, you said that you're constantly thinking up new things, and I can't imagine your mind must be going 100 miles an hour. But, you know, I think what's so unique is that you people need to realize that you're creating things specifically for the paranormal field, whereas I don't really know of anybody else doing that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's great.
100% of my time, Chris, right now for the past, I guess maybe 4 years anyways. For the past 4 years, 100% of my time has been dedicated to helping the paranormal community progress. Okay. The other thing that I just created, I'm really intrigued by, and I hope you don't mind me babbling on about some of these products, but the other thing I'm really intrigued by are trigger objects. And everyone probably that's in this business knows what a trigger object is. So one of the things that I started doing is I started creating trigger objects with sensors in them. My first trigger object is a teddy bear with a REM feature built into it. And this particular product is important to me because, first off, there's no antenna. So the entire teddy bear becomes a sensor, and it's a good sized teddy bear. It's like maybe 12 inches tall and sits up. It's got LEDs and sound in it, has an LED in its nose, has an LED in its forehead. It's got LEDs in its little paws, okay, little hands. All right. And the cool thing about that is, when you're, again, it's an application specific type of thing where you're in an environment, you're doing investigation. If there are children involved, you take out something that's appropriate for a child, okay? You sit down, you put the teddy bear down on a table, a bed, a floor, and you talk to that child, okay? And you put this thing, you turn it on, there's a little switch inside the foot, you turn it on, and you try to interact with that child. You try to get them to turn on the different lights. I've seen some remarkable, very remarkable things happen on a Paranormal Challenge with the MelRam, and I'm just totally fascinated with how well this thing is working. I mean, in my eyes, I've seen so much confirmation and direct communication with this device from videos submitted to me on YouTube and on the show that I'm really going to pursue the REM hot and heavy. I'm going to try to improve on it. I'm going to try to add more to it. I've already done some things that a lot of people don't know that I've done. They're actually doing research while they're using this device. And when I watch it on TV and I watch it in a video on YouTube, there are things that I put into the program that I can see. And it actually adds a lot more credibility to their experiences. And at some point I'll release and tell people what I've done. But so far I've been very impressed.
Wow, that's trigger objects. I mean, I wouldn't even have thought to go there with that kind of device or anything. That's pretty incredible.
It makes sense, right? It makes sense to do that, right?
It really does. And, you know, it seems like you hit all the areas we need to be thinking about. I'm wondering, do you have any, or have you even thought of going into the area of video? Or is there anything that you can kind of tinker around with there to you know, fix up for us?
Well, there are a lot of people out there that are more adapted to that field than I am. I'm not an optical person. I mean, I've worked with lasers since 1984, which actually I'll be happy to tell you about a new laser product that I have coming out very soon. I have a prototype. I'll be introducing it at an event at the Stanley Hotel in November, but I'll tell you about that in a minute. But the cameras and stuff like that, I'm more about the sensory kind of thing. So what I do is I like to focus on the things I know I'm good at. I could probably do a lot of other things if I wanted to, but I'm just too lazy to learn about them. So if somebody is using different filters to try to capture different light conditions and so forth, or block out, you know, have low pass or high pass filters, you know, that's great. You know, I'm going to concentrate on the other things that can be combined with cameras to help make your validation a little bit more meaningful. All right. So, for example, I have a new laser-based detector that will detect shadows, mist, ectoplasm. It's so sensitive, it'll detect a human hair. And this laser, basically what I do is I'll take a basic $6 green laser pointer, and I'll turn that entire beam into a sensor that if anything changes the contrast of the photons in that beam, I will detect it. And I will detect it and give you an audible and visual alert of what's happening. So what I've done is I've taken a green laser pen for $6. I use beam bending optics. Basically, they're prisms that can direct the light left or right. You can go several hundred feet with this beam. So you can go down a hallway 100 feet, use one of my right angle prisms, make a left turn, a right turn, go into a room. By the time you're done, you can have 500 feet of laser beam here. And that entire laser beam is so sensitive that if you put a piece of plastic in it, I'll be able to know it. So this is being designed to help people when they have a camera going down a hallway and they see something and my detector detects it. Now you've got something that really means a lot. Okay. So this is where I'm headed. And this is my way of detecting a shadow. Other people are using the grids and the different types of things, but really all that does is it, if you're not looking or if you don't have a camera on it, you may catch it. But the whole idea is for you to be alert and to be able to hear it and see it when it happens.
You know, I think you mentioned something there. And, you know, I brought up the video thing just because I couldn't think of anything you weren't doing. And I never would have thought of this laser. I mean, that's fantastic. And I like that you're mentioning different ways of validating, because I think the more ways we approach it and the different ways we can record events with different types of data, the better off we are. So I like that you're offering all these new ways.
It's important, Chris, because I mean, even the little mini DVR 01 that we sell, which is it measures motion, heat or motion and heat combined. What I did was I put audible hot and cold spot detection into the camera, because when you're filming something and you see it, you can't experience the temperature or any gradient changes around you. So what this does is if there's a temperature change, whether the temperature goes up or down, you know, there's a one octave tone for each degree step up and one octave down for each degree down, you know, change down, a decrease. So what that does is if you're filming something, you can now hear a temperature change on the audio picked up from the audio of your camera. See, it's really all about working efficiently in what you do. That's all it is. You want to combine certain things. If you already got a camera there, why not combine a temperature detector that can give you a sound when temperature is detected and you know exactly how many degrees it's changing just by listening to the tones? It just makes sense.
I love that. And it's so simple. I mean, it's just the idea of it is so simple.
Hey, I can put temperature into any camera out there. So it's that's how simple it is. In fact, I've been able to reduce my temperature circuit with sound down to about the size of a quarter. So that's how small we got it. So it's really tiny. That's why I put it into the K2 meter or the PSB7 or the MEL meter or basically almost anything. It's really tiny.
And one of the things that I love with what you're doing with your stuff, Gary, is you're helping us to free up our hands as well. I mean, we all know if we've been in the field, we're literally every member's got like a little tote bag they're carrying around because there's so many little tools we want to have in the field with us. And what you're doing is you're allowing us to look at one piece of equipment and get anywhere from 2 to 3 readings, if not more now. And that is really becoming efficient in the field. Mm-hmm.
Well, Tim, I'm glad you brought that up because, and I hope you don't mind me keep mentioning this, but Zach will have a new meter on the show that I just built, and next year it'll be available to everybody. But what it does, it's basically the MEL meter, which has a digital EMF. It's got the digital temperature. It's got the flashlight. It's got the REM in it. It's got the hot and cold spot detection circuit built into it. And it has 3-axis vibration built into it. So it's got all that in one MEL meter. So, and it works like a champ. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. And I think it's just a matter of time before we're all at that stage. But the unfortunate side, the flip side of that is that, there's the expense keeps going up, and I don't know what people are willing to spend. I mean, by the time I get something like that built, you're looking at, a $399 product. And here we are starting with a MEL meter that you can pick up someplace for $99. And it would go up to, in increments of 10 different meters up to $399 at the high end. So, but people still have to understand something. When we build these products, I now have 5 technicians that are building products around the clock during the day. And what we do is we build these things. It could take anywhere from 2 to 2.5 hours to build a custom product like that. But so there's a tremendous amount of labor that goes into it, and not to mention the technology and the circuit boards and all the things that went into the design. So, but when it's all said and done, if you have 6 different items in your hand, what else do you need? You really don't need anything else.
And I think that's what it's all. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to scale down, get out into the field and do what we can with as little equipment as possible, but while gathering as much information as possible. That's what it's all about.
Yep, exactly. And the other thing is you don't want to make it too complex because there are a lot of people out there that are not, it may take a little bit more training to get them at a level where they can understand how to effectively use all this different equipment.
Right.
And I deal with that almost on, a daily basis with the RTEVP because I think I may have made it, although it's not complex at all, and I'm trying to create tutorial videos on YouTube for people, so they understand how to use it, and it's not as complex as they think.
And that's a very, very good point, Gary, because as an owner of the RTEVP myself, it seems like it can do 100 things, which, it can do a ton of things. But what I like, though, when you really kind of just pull it back a little bit and understand what we're looking at and dealing with, there's not a whole lot of buttons on that recorder, but they all have a function. And it's once you realize, don't get so overwhelmed by what it can do. Understand that it's just a matter of pushing the right button to get to where you need to. And it's actually a very simple but well put together piece of equipment.
Thank you. Now, the RTEVP, I'm going to ask you a question, Tim. Now, have you figured out how to use the RTEVP and have a speaker right next to it and hear your session live yet? Have you figured that out?
I haven't figured it out. I haven't attempted that, though, but I would love
to. Okay. Well, there are little things, little nuances that you can do with that. And I've looked high and low, but I haven't been able to find anybody using it that way. Simply if you adjust your playback for 15 seconds, okay, and you have your power MP3 speaker right next to the RTVP, you simply hit the record button. That little click of the record button becomes a tag for you. And what you do is, you hit the record button, the red light will start blinking, let it blink a couple of times, ask your question. Try to ask your question in 5 seconds or less. And then just sit quietly. After the 15 seconds is up, what happens? It plays back. So now you're going to hear your question, you're going to hear a quiet time of maybe 10 seconds where you're waiting for a response. Once that buffer is filled, it's going to cue and it's going to play back for you. So you're going to hear your voice and you're going to hear any response that you capture within that 15 seconds. Now, at the end of that 15 seconds, you're going to hear a little snap from the record button. As soon as you hear that, you hold your finger on the record button and save that as a mini file. If you heard something, okay, then you simply, if you heard something, you think you heard something in playback, use the IntelliCue. That's the down arrow on the right side, and you can back up as many times as you want without interrupting the recording. So you can actually listen. If you think you hear an EVP, you can just back it up and listen to it and listen to it. And then when you're done, just hit the record button, save it as a mini file, press the record button, start all over again. You can do up to 3 EVPs a minute using that, and you only have to analyze the stuff that you hear a response on. So it also makes, we have little mini files like that. It also makes hitting the enter button very, very easy if you want to listen to the whole file, you know, after it's been recorded. So, you know, there's just one simple approach. It's just another technique, another way that you can use that device effectively. But I've never seen anybody use it that way. So it's really hard and kind of frustrating too, only because, and I blame myself because maybe I haven't made enough tutorial videos so that people can better understand how to use the device.
Is there a website, Gary, that people can go to if they do have questions regarding some of these equipments? Do you have like a frequently asked questions section?
I do. I have a frequently asked question. You can go to my website, www.pro-measure.com. And when you go there, there's a button on the left, you know, RTEVP. Go there, and there's some tips and tricks, and there's also an area you can find where, you know, some questions are asked and answered. But you can also go to YouTube, because I've made some videos and others have made some tutorial videos that shows you the basic operation of the device. I also have a 15-minute video, how to use the data logger and the counter interface. I show you very detailed way of using it. And so anyone who has the new device, wants to see how it's used, can go there and get a firsthand look.
Well, Gary, speaking of questions, we had one in the chat room, but it goes back to the laser device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Viva in the chat room was curious as to how you keep the laser cool.
Oh, these are just semiconductor lasers. This is just a laser diode. Laser diodes, you know, don't need to be cooled. We're not using helium neon lasers or anything that would generate heat. Okay. These are the same kind of lasers that you would buy, you know, for a laser pointer. The only difference is I'm using green. And the reason I use a green laser pointer is because you can see the beam in the air. You'll be able to see the ectoplasm or the mist cut through the beam. And the other thing, too, is the optic response of a green laser is 532 nanometers. That means the human eye has a specific response to light. Okay. And, you know, below what we see is UV, and above what we see is infrared. So, you know, if you look at it, it's kind of like a bell curve, and we're right around, we peak out at around 560 nanometers. So the 532 nanometers, which is the wavelength of the laser beam, of the laser source, it's perfect. And my detection electronics really reacts to it well. So if you already have one of those, again, I'm trying to think ahead here and make things efficient. If you already have one of those prism lasers with all the little dots and all that other stuff, you know, you can take the cap off of that. If you take the cap off of that, you'll get just a straight laser beam. You can actually use that laser with my electronics and everything will work perfectly fine. So the whole idea there is you don't have to go out and buy another laser to work with my device when it's done. You use what you got. If you don't have a laser, you can buy a laser. The only thing different that I'm going to do with my laser is my laser isn't going to work on 2 AA batteries or 2 AAA batteries. Mine's going to work on a 9-volt battery, and it's going to be in a square block with a tripod mount on it. So, and it'll last a long time. It'll be a physical on-off switch instead of a momentary tactile switch. So that's the only difference.
Very good. Gary, just because we're running out of time here, and we've mm-hmm. talked a lot about the MelRem meter and the RTEVP so far, which are fantastic devices, but I don't want to chintz out on any of your other great you know, things you've created, like the static pod. What mm-hmm. can you explain that?
Sure. Well, we have a, what I did was I started off with a basic static pod. And, you know, if you look at my products, you'll see that, like, for example, the static pod or the E-pod is what I call it. It's an E-field is what it is. Basically, I start off with a single field, but now I discontinued that model pretty much. Now we have what we call an E-field or an E-pod amp. And that device has RGB in it. It has three different detection circuits with an antenna, and it's a proximity detector. And what it does is as energy, static energy, or imbalanced electrons essentially, approaches this thing, what you end up with is the first detection is a green light, and then the next detection light is a blue light, and then a red light. And all of those occur as you get closer to it. So the green light will go off if you're about 3 or 4 feet away. If it's a very dry environment, like in the wintertime, you can get up to 8 foot detection distance on this particular device. And so it basically is designed so that if something is approaching it, you can actually see where it is in relationship to that device. And then we created a REM pod amp. The REM pod is like the Mel REM that you have, but I really pimped it out with an amplification circuit that allows detection up to, you know, several inches away from that antenna. And it's very, very sensitive to any changes in the field around it. So we have the REM pod amp, and we've got, I got so many different things that I can't really, you know, get into all of them, but you know, they're there, and we have them listed. I have a magnetometer pod, which detects natural field changes from the Earth, and we also have a melimeter with natural detection ability built into it. And I've even put a spirit box into the melimeter. So we have all these different devices. All people have to do is go to ProMeasure and check it out.
The ideas. Do the ideas ever stop coming to you?
If they do, I'll know when it's time to quit. You know? So as long as, you know, I got to tell you something, as long as those ideas are there for me, I feel like I'm contributing something and I'm making a little bit of a difference. So, you know, I know the time will come when I'm going to say, okay, I'm done. And because I can feel myself getting burned out. I haven't had a vacation in 2 years. I haven't taken any time off. I took a couple of days off. My youngest daughter just graduated from high school, and we had a graduation party. Now she's in college. And so, you know, I took a couple of days off to bring her up to college and, you know, those types of things. But really, I'm getting to the point where I'm getting tired. And so, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to say, okay, it's time to step back and just do, you know, do something else.
Well, Gary, I think anybody listening can hear the enthusiasm and how excited you are for your products. And I think that can be appreciated. A lot of people may not know there's a little bit of personal motivation behind that for you as well that I think got you started in this. But I think they can definitely hear, that enthusiasm that you have for what you're doing.
Yeah, well, that's the most exciting part is that a lot of the stuff, see, I'm on my own beta test site, right? So, I mean, the fact that Melissa passed over in 2004, September 28th, we're approaching the 7-year anniversary this month. You know, last time I heard from her was on her birthday on Valentine's Day. I put the RT, my daughter and I were eating cake. We celebrate her birthday every year. Nothing has changed there. You know, I know that she's safe. I know that things are good. I put the RT down on the table. My daughter, who is in charge of a rape and assault for the Navy, she's a civilian. She's on Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. She's a civilian there working for the military. And she called on a satellite phone. My wife picks up the phone and she's talking in the other room. And I'm talking to my daughter, Heather, and I'm saying, wow, this is good cake. As soon as I said, this is good cake, Melissa responded on the RT. She goes, and she said, I'm glad you like it, Dad. And I'm like, okay. And I could hear me clicking the rewind, okay? And I listened to it four times. Now, by hitting it backwards four times, I skewed the data. But, and I didn't realize it later. But as I'm listening and repeating, I said to Heather, I said, I just heard from Melissa. And Heather gave out a nice cheer. She goes, yay, okay, we heard from Mel. And then, but in the background, when I finally listened to the file, because I kept backing up, Melissa goes, hey, wake up. Just like that. Hey, wake up. You know, I'm talking to you. And I didn't hear that part until I analyzed the file. But then I walked into the dining room and I said, Mel, are you here with Mommy, Daddy, and Heather? And I got a Class A EVP that said, yes. And she goes, I am. So I've got that. It's the most beautiful EVP. So if you hear that enthusiasm, it's because because I can express myself that way now. I couldn't express myself any other way until I had this confirmation that she was okay. And by knowing that she's okay, I can live my life. And that's how it works.
Well, I applaud your efforts to support grief support. I think that's one thing that teams need to be looking at when they investigate is recommending support for grieving families. Because I think everybody should be able to get to the point where you are, where you can accept that they're okay and be all right.
Yep.
Granted, you miss her terribly, but you're at a, you know, kind of at a place where you're okay.
That's it. You just take it one day at a time.
Right.
You live with it.
What a story, Gary. Thank you so much again for sharing that. And
my pleasure.
And letting our listeners know. Real quick again, Gary, what's the website people can find all these great gadgets at and read up on them?
Okay. www.pro-measure.com.
Okay. Any last thing you want to get out there?
No, not really. I mean, the only other, yeah, I do. Last thing. I'm going to ask people to watch Paranormal Challenge September 9th. Because there's going to be some groundbreaking evidence revealed and captured with the MEL-REM ATDD on that show. You've got to watch that. It's going to be absolutely groundbreaking evidence.
I'm excited. Okay, wonderful. Gary Galka, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
All right. Thank you. I'll talk to you again.
Thank you, Gary.
All right. All right. Good night. Thanks.
Good night. Amazing work that guy is doing. Literally, you know, one man through the love of his daughter is helping to propel this field. It's really an emotional story.
It is. And, you know, we didn't exactly state that, but, you know, the MEL meters were named after his daughter.
Right.
And, you know, you can't, like I said, you can't miss the enthusiasm in his voice. And I think as long as we have people motivated by whatever motivates them, but as long as they have that much enthusiasm, you know, we can keep moving forward.
Absolutely. Gary Galka, check him out and check out his products, man. It's good stuff. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up Taps Family Radio, of course, with one of our favorite segments where we get to answer your questions. Mailbag is coming up next on TFR here on Jackalope Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio, where the weird is normal.
When you hear strange noises in the night, when unexplained shadows move through the halls, when you feel there's nowhere you can turn, we're here to help. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. We're a proud TAPS family member with chapters in Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. Our dedicated team of investigators is ready to assist you. With professionalism and the utmost discretion, we'll help you understand what you've been experiencing. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. Because at times like this, you don't simply need proof. You need answers. For more information, visit us on the web at www.spars-paranormal.com.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio, where ghost stories come to life.
When you need to know what goes bump in the night, contact the Wausau Paranormal Research Society, serving the entire state of Wisconsin. Investigations are free of charge and completely confidential. You'll receive objective, scientific analysis of the activity in your home. The goal is to provide you with a rational explanation for what you're seeing or hearing. The Wausau Paranormal Research Society, where the paranormal and reality meet. To schedule an investigation, visit WPRS.net.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio. Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins with you on the tail end of another edition of TFR. And again, don't forget, you can find all of our shows posted at our website, tapsfamilyradio.net, where we encourage you to stop by and be a part of the chat room anytime. You can be in the chat room any day, but we're always in there during the show. But you can stop in and be a part of our chat room or listen to all of our past shows at any time. So make sure you stop in. And again, the producers do a great job of getting everything posted usually within 24 hours of the show. So this edition, you should be able to hear about this time sometime tomorrow, if not a little bit earlier, because Cormac is just a workaholic and we're lucky to have him behind the scenes for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It is time now to do a little bit of a segment that we like to do where we get to answer your questions, the listeners' questions. And keep in mind, you can email us anytime, tfradiotim@gmail.com, tfradiochris@gmail.com, or tfradiocormac@gmail.com. Cormac, too, you can also, if you like the music that gets played during the show, Cormac will take requests. You can send him a song that you would like to hear, and he will make sure to get it on for you. All right. And it is time for mailbag now, though, Chris. What do you got for us?
Well, I have two really good questions tonight, I think. The first one says, if I have a haunting in my home, is there anything that I can do myself before contacting a team?
Okay. Good question. Sorry. Okay. Very good question.
Go ahead. Oh, well, I was just going to say, you know, it depends, because already they're assuming that there is already a haunting. And of course, people do make that assumption, you know. So one of the things, the first thing I would say that they can do to help before contacting a team is to try to maintain some rationality and objectivity when you're in your home. I know that's hard to do if you're the one going through the experiences. Right. But to first kind of keep that cool head and maintain a little perspective so that you don't add things in when you're talking to the team that are added in purely by emotion.
Very good point. As a matter of fact, I just dealt with this with a prospective client just a couple weeks ago. Was actually sent through TAPS and then through TAPS family. And then it got put to us over here in Michigan. And she was convinced, without going into too much, that she'd used a Ouija board. She had herself convinced that she moved to a new home and something happened because she was using the Ouija board. Long story. And literally, it was a 2-hour phone conversation with her doing exactly what you were talking about, Chris, just helping. Sometimes you just need to help these clients step back a little bit, take a deep breath. And, you know, because once the mind gets going, you can get yourself lost and make yourself think that everything that's happening is related to an actual haunting. So sometimes it's a matter of just helping them step back, take a deep breath, explaining to them, helping them realize that there could be rational explanations for this. And then at the end of that conversation, what I asked her to do was to please start keeping a diary of sorts. Always have a notepad and pen nearby, and as events start happening, to start writing them down. Time of day, what the event was. Write it down as quick as they can, so it's fresh in their memory. And then from there, that starts to give us an actual footpath, if you will, a track to follow if we need to progress any further.
I think that's great advice. And I think not only does it provide that path, but it also causes them to take pause and think before they write something down.
Right.
Could I have been overreacting, or could, you know, my friend and I here have been kind of building each other up a little bit, you know, causes them to maybe really calm down and think before they write it down.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a diary is a great way. So if anyone out there is listening right now and you think maybe something's going on in your home, but you're not ready to maybe make that step to reach out to a team yet, I right now, you know, Chris and I, and I know Cormac was saying the same thing off the air, a real good thing to do is to start a diary, because, you know, and this is, it works the same way for people who have tried to lose weight. People will tell you, keep a food journal, because before you shove something in your mouth, you'll think about it rationally. You know, do I really want to add these extra calories to my diet? It works the same way with the paranormal. Before you actually write it down and try to and make it, convince yourself that it was paranormal, as you're writing it down, it might help you rationalize what happened.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, this one I thought was interesting too. Well, here, let me just give it to you.
Okay.
Can the condition of a home or building invite a ghost? You know how you drive by an eerie looking building and automatically people go, "Ooh, I want to go in there. I bet it's haunted."
Yes.
But, you know, a brand new building can be haunted. So my first thought when I saw this was that I think the condition of a home or building may be more likely to create the perception of a haunting. People are going to feel more freaked out in kind of a spookier, maybe cluttered building, or, you know, and as I say cluttered, if a building or a home has a lot of clutter or is very cramped, then that can alone cause you to feel feelings of paranoia and, you know, kind of unrest and unease and those types of things too. Just my first thoughts.
That's a good point. Very good point. And, I think absolutely the surroundings can lend itself to it as well. And along the same lines as you're saying, can you read that again though? Cause I just,
sure.
I'm wondering, go ahead.
It says, can the condition of a home or building invite a ghost?
Okay. Cause when you first read that, the first thing I thought of wasn't kind of the way you had mentioned it, but I completely agree with what you said. I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, possibly the activity within a home or stuff that maybe happened in that building. Maybe there was, you know, some kids messing around, you know, with some spells or witchcraft. That's kind of where my mind went with it. I guess that's a little bit deeper and darker, and maybe that's where my mind goes. I don't know.
Well, that could have been what they meant. I really, you know, I don't know. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
You know, does the activity within a building lend itself to invite a ghost? Is kind of where my mind went with it. And if that was the direction they were going, you know, I would say, yeah, absolutely. I think the actions of individuals within a building prior, whether they be old homeowners or whatever, could possibly affect the area.
I would have to agree. I didn't even think of that. You know, one thought as you were talking that came back to mind, you know, I was thinking about the conditions inside a building when I first read this, but the condition, the physical condition of a building, whether it be wiring, and when I go into that wiring and that EMF thing, here we are again with that debate about EMF. You know, most of the time you'll hear teams say, and my team operates this way, where if we hit an EMF field, our purpose in detecting that field is to see if maybe it is influencing people to have hallucinations or to feel those, you know, feelings of paranoia and the things like that. Where there is still a school of thought that EMF may be, invites a haunting or energizes a spirit. So, you know, if that's the school of thought and there is a building with deteriorating wiring, you know, those people who think that the EMF or the energy in the building might be feeding a spirit may think that, yes, that could create a haunt. Boy, I took the long way around that, didn't I?
The teacher came out in you. You were explaining it. No, don't be. That was a very clear way of saying it, and it makes complete sense. You know?
I would have had charts and visual aids, but, you know, it didn't work on radio.
And exactly. Cormac, our producer, brings up a good point too. See, Cormac's not just a pretty face. He's got some great ideas here too. He says, you know, also too, and we hear this a lot in classic hauntings, as a building starts to get refurbished, change can sometimes cause the haunting itself.
Right.
We've heard a lot of that in, you know, very traditional classic haunts.
In fact, the haunting in Connecticut, if I remember correctly, one of the things that they mentioned was all of the work being done in that home.
Right.
When it all started.
Yeah, when Carmen Reed and the family first moved in, they started renovating and cleaning. And yeah, she said that's when they noticed it right away.
Right.
So, very good point. One email that I forgot to give out, and I do apologize, is our booking agent, not for Chris and I, we don't book, but I mean for bringing us guests, tfradiolarry@gmail.com. And we want to get that email out there too, because if any of our listeners have any guests you think would make very interesting, you know, if you know someone who would make a great guest that we haven't had on yet, feel free to email Larry. And Larry is great about spreading it between Chris and I and Cormac, and we talk everything out and all of our guests. So you can email Larry, tfradiolarry@gmail.com, and let him know if you're interested in hearing someone on our show as well, because we would love suggestions that way. Speaking of Larry, Larry's got a paranormal show as well.
Yes, he does.
It's called Paranormal Community Radio, and they are going to be on tonight, coming up, it's about a half hour after our show. And you can find his show at paracomradio.com. And they are going to be having Bill Bird of the Historical Octagon Hall in Franklin, Kentucky, sharing some history and stories of that area. So that should be a fun show as well. So that's tonight at 7:30 p.m. Central. That would be 8:30 p.m. Eastern.
You know, and in that show, one thing I appreciate about their format is it's just so laid back. It's a bunch of friends just hanging out, talking, and, you know, they have a chat room as well. So people can pop into their chat room and ask questions there, too.
Well, I think the name says it all, Paranormal Community Radio. That's exactly what you expect, kind of like the community just getting together and, you know, like a block party. You know,
right.
Just hanging out and having a good time. So, well, our next guest is a mystery at this point. In 2 weeks, we like to keep you on the edge of your seat. So you'll need to keep tuned in to our website, TabsFamilyRadio.net, and to our Facebook page, because that will also let you know who our next guest is going to be in 2 weeks. But keep in mind, on the off weeks when we don't have a live show, you can still hear Taps Family Radio on Jackalope Radio as they replay one of our past shows, or you can listen to them anytime at TapsFamilyRadio.net. I can't believe another 2 hours is coming gone. That's going to do it for TFR. On behalf of Chris Perkins and Tim Ellis, myself, have a good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Taps Family Radio, the safest place in the paranormal world. Join us every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 Pacific on the new home for Taps Family Radio, Jackalope Radio.